GA with business marketing degree, and worked with marketing for a little while with Chick-fil-A, and they loved her there, and they were like, you know, we want you to go straight to corporate. We can get you on the fast track. You can be making this many dollars in a matter of years. And that's just not where Amy's heart was. She went to Uganda right after she graduated, and her heart never fully came back with her. The people of Uganda really did capture her heart. So when she was working there for the first time in 2009, then she made several more trips during 2010, she was working with a baby orphanage. And day in and day out, they would get phone calls saying, we have this dying baby on death's doorstep. You have to come. You have to come help. And my sister would daily see these babies and hold these babies that were dying. And it really took a toll on her. As people here in America and in Canada, we often hear those terms, dying babies in Africa, they're starving children in Africa. You know, you grow up hearing it, finish all the food on your plate because there's dying children in Africa. But when you hold that child day in and day out, it changes things for you. And my sister really felt the Lord calling her to start her own ministry. Not necessarily open up another baby orphanage, but she started to dig deeper. She felt the Lord saying, you've got to figure out the problem. Yes, you're helping, you know, by helping these babies, but you've got to figure out the solution before they're dying, starving orphans. And so my sister began asking questions. She would ask all these people bringing babies, leaving them on the doorsteps, leaving them in dumpsters, in pit latrines, where's the mother? What happened to the mother? And over and over and over, she would hear, the mother died in childbirth. The mother died in childbirth. And so Amy would ask another question, say, how old was the mother? And she began hearing, 14. They were 16. They were 12. They were 18. And so Amy really felt the Lord calling her to open up a ministry that ministered not only to these babies, but to their mothers, to these young teenage girls with crisis pregnancies who had been rejected, who had been cast out by their families and friends because they had become pregnant. So before I start necessarily going into what the ministry is, I want to show a quick promo video that kind of gives an overview of everything, and then I'll come back.
Today, over a billion people live and die in desperate poverty, live on less than a dollar a day. Today, 30,000 children will breathe their last breath due to either starvation or preventable disease. And while millions of them, powerless and silent, hover on the edge of starvation, we live like they don't even exist.
See.
I tell you the truth. Whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. This is the question. Where are we going to stand? With the poor and starving, or with the overfed? Are we going to stand with the poor man on his way to heaven, or with the rich man on his way to hell? And the reality is, God measures the integrity of our faith by our concern for the poor.
So I wanted to show that first so that you guys can see some of the faces that I'm going to be talking and sharing about. I'm a photographer and I'm very visual, so when I can have a face to kind of put to these stories, it helps me. So being led by what God thought that, you know, she felt God wanted her to start this ministry to these young teenage girls, Amy began in January. She was going to start a maternity home so that these young girls could have a place to come and live where they would be safe and they could learn about Jesus and they could get help. But first, let me say this. When she first moved over there in May 2010 permanently, full-time, and when she was heading back, she had a main goal of working on the adoption papers for one of the little girls that she had had placed in her arms and she had just felt connected to, and Lord really told her, this one's not going to leave. This one's going to be yours. And so when she went back, she was had that main goal in mind. And within 10 days, the Lord had brought four other little children into her home that would never leave again. So she has six children. She's in the adoption process. They're all under the age of four. So it is a very loud house when you go over there. And it's a lot of fun. So a lot of 2010, she spent, or 2011, so she spent nursing those children back to health. And she just knew that the Lord's timing would be perfect when she did open up this maternity home when she began this ministry. So in January, I was actually there. I was there from December to April. And Amy works with local pastors because when these girls are kicked out of their homes or on the streets, they don't necessarily know where to run for help. But many times after trying many other options, everything they can think of, they'll go find a local pastor. So Amy works with about 10 different local pastors in the slums and the villages of where she lives in Jinja. And in January, she had one of the pastors that knows her call her and say, I have this girl that I need you to come help. I need you to meet her. And Amy said, okay, do you know anything about her? And he said, no, I just know the situation's really bad and I need you to come. And Amy said, okay, I'll be there in the morning. So we all got in Amy's van, Amy and Betty, who's a Ugandan, and she's kind of like the assistant director over there in Uganda with Amy. And we got in the van and we drove to these slums and walked way back into this village up this huge hill and walked up to this house. I say house, it was an 8x8 foot little shack. And Amy walked inside and there was some plywood put down on the floor with a sheet. And there was about 8 kids where a widow and her 8 children lived, just laying on the floor. It was early in the morning. And so Amy came back out of the house and talked to the pastor, and the mother was there. And Amy said, you know, I think the pastor's explained kind of what I wanted to do, how I want to help Rebecca. And she said, can I meet Rebecca? And Rebecca's 14. She was 4 months pregnant. And she came out of the house, and Amy kind of sat down and kind of went over. She said, you know, Rebecca, I want to help you. I want you to come live with me. I want to provide the meals for you, prenatal checkups. I'm going to do everything within my power to make sure that you don't die in childbirth, that you have a safe delivery, that your baby's safe and healthy. And this tiny little, just bone and skin little girl just sat there staring at Amy. And my sister has much more of a southern drawl than I do. I don't know if that's hard to imagine, but she's sitting there explaining all of this, all excited, you know, the first girl is going to come into this maternity home, and Rebecca is sitting there just glaring at her with the coldest, hardest eyes you've ever seen, just black. And Amy got done explaining, and she said, do you want to come? She's not going to force anybody to come live with her. So she said, would you like to come live with me? Do you want to come? We'll go hop in my van and we'll go get you some food and everything you'll need. We already had a lot of the stuff prepared. And Rebecca just looked at her and goes, And Amy was a little discouraged. She said, maybe she didn't understand, you know. So she explains it all again. I'm going to help you. I'm going to make sure you have food. We're going to get you all checked out. Would you like to come? You want me to help you? And she's just like, So Amy's trying not to be discouraged. She's like, okay, well, go get all of your belongings. You're going to come live with me. You'll probably live with me for 9 months to a year. So go pack everything you need in the house and come on. So Rebecca goes in her little house there and comes back out with the little clutch purse about this size. And Amy turns to Betty, the national Ugandan, and said, did she understand? Go get everything she has. She's going to be living with me. Betty says, yeah, she understood. Let's go. And Amy said, no. Tell her she needs everything she has. Everything. And Betty says, that's it, Amy. She had gone inside and grabbed a T-shirt that she had and put it in this bag. And it's just heartbreaking because even though Amy deals with this day in and day out, you never fully come to terms with that to where you're normal, which that's the normal. You've grown up in, you know, these countries where we have so much. And it tore me apart. And I'm watching all of this. And, you know, I'm taking videos and pictures just of the village, talking to the village kids. And I kind of hear this going on. And, you know, Amy, who's a little more emotional than me, she starts to, you know, just, it tears you down. And Amy, who compared to the world's eyes would say she lives on very little. She's given up a lot from what she could have had and what she does have here in the United States, or not here, but in the United States. And most people would say she's very very poor as a missionary. She doesn't live with very much. She eats rice and beans probably 8 times a week. But Amy knew that even though she may have only 10 t-shirts in her closet back in Uganda at home, this girl only has one. And even though she may be sleeping on a foam mattress this size, this girl's sleeping on plywood. And she knew that she was going to take this girl back into her home and she was going to see what she had. And it's the times like that that you realize that these are the neediest of the needy. And these are the poorest of the poor. And these are the most desperate of the desperate. So Rebecca got in the car, and we found out really quickly she has motion sickness. And so it was only about a 5-minute drive or 10-minute drive to Amy's house, but we were all like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? But Rebecca came home with us that day, and over the next weeks, she pushed every button that you could possibly imagine. Every boundary, every limit, the rules we just have at the house, she pushed that love. She tested it. And it was hard. It was hard when you walk in and she's just breaking your dishes in the kitchen. It tests Amy. But what she was saying is, are you still going to love me if I push all of the buttons? If I break all the rules you set, if I test your love, are you still going to love me? Because these girls, they come from rape situations, prostitute situations where they're selling their bodies every night for a piece of bread in the morning. They come from situations where Rebecca's mother told her, I don't care if you live or die. I'm done with you. They don't understand unconditional love. I was so privileged to grow up in a Christian home like Amy, and we knew our parents loved us. Whether we did wrong, whether we were disciplined, whether, yes, at times they were mad, I'm sure, you know. But you can think of somebody in your life who's loved you unconditionally, whether it's a parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, friend. You understand that. These girls have no concept of that. But over the next few weeks, as we continue to love Rebecca and to show her the love of Christ and the forgiveness, everything she had done, and not judging her, the walls began to come down. Those cold eyes began to shine some light into them. And we were sitting at dinner one night, and Rebecca looked at me and Amy and said, you know that day y'all came to my house and picked me up? You were like, yeah. She said, I had not been home in 8 days. My mother kicked me out of the house, told me she didn't care if I lived or died. She never wanted to see me again, and I wasn't welcome there. She said, I had been living in a mango tree for the past week at 4 months pregnant. Because with nowhere to go, she knew the streets were too dangerous. She would get killed. And so she climbed up in the biggest mango tree she could and ate nothing but the mangoes of the tree for a week until the pastor heard about her and said, your mom's going to let you stay here for one night because the lady, Amy, that's coming to talk to you, she needs to know where you are. She needs to know where to find you. And as you listen to that, you listen to these stories, it's easy for us to sit down and want to be like, Jesus loves you. You know, he cares about you. He has a plan for you. This wasn't an accident. This was God's plan. And how are they supposed to understand that, you know? And so it was about a month later, and it was just amazing to watch the transformation in Rebecca's life as she began opening up and becoming a much less stressed person. You could see the burdens lifted off her. She didn't have to worry about where her next meal was coming from. She didn't have to worry about where she was going to sleep at night. And that transformation of that change can just make in a life. So about a month later, Amy heard about a heaven and hell drama in the capital city about 2 hours away. This was about a month and a half later, and we had 3 more girls that had brought into the maternity home, ages like 2 16-year-olds and a 15-year-old, and then Rebecca was 14. And so Amy was like, we're going to take them to this heaven and hell drama. It's going to be great. Because as much as Amy would love to say that these girls come in and she sits down and we go over the Romans Road and they all accept Christ and everything's great, it just doesn't happen like that a lot of times. So she was like, we're going to take them to this drama. It's going to be great. It's going to be this huge skit. So we load up in the car, 4 pregnant teenage girls, all get motion sick. And so I'm in the very back of this van, right? Amy's up front with the windows, and none of the windows back here. I'm like, Amy, we've got to get there. And then it starts raining, so they can't even roll down the windows, and I'm thinking this was a mistake. But we keep going. We were going to be late, so Amy drops me off with the girls, and Amy had also decided to bring two of her oldest, a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old, Amina and Safina. And so she dropped me off with the pregnant teenage girls, said, y'all go find a seat, just go try to get in. So I was like, all right, I can do this. So we get our way all the way through. We didn't even have the tickets that we were supposed to have beforehand. I said, I really need to get through these doors with these girls. I don't even care if I go. I want them in there. So we got tickets. They let us in. We go find a seat. I wanted them as close up front as I could. I didn't really think about this at the time, but as soon as it started, I realized real fast I was only going to be translating the entire thing because it was in English. Rebecca understands some English. The official language of Uganda is English if you go to school, but it costs money to go to school, so a lot of times these children will not know a lot of English. They can't afford to go to school. So I translated a lot to Rebecca, who understood English and would ask me questions, and I would explain it. She was explaining to the other girls what was going on, what they were saying. But as this gorgeous drama was played out about heaven and hell and the choices of life, and it's not about what you wear, it's not about what you drive, where you work, the parents you have, if your parent was a pastor, it's about whether you have a personal relationship with Jesus. These girls just became silent. And as it got towards the end, there was an altar call. And that altar call couldn't have come fast enough. Rebecca and Bridget and Brenda were out of their seats. They got it. They understood. And they were gone. I didn't know how we'd find them. There was maybe 2,000 people in this church. But towards the end of it, we went and find them later. And Rebecca came up to us and she says, I get it. She said, the reason I know that Jesus loves me is because you guys have loved me. Even when I was pregnant, even when I broke all your dishes, even when I stole your food, did things I wasn't supposed to, I know that Jesus loves me and he can forgive me because you did. And that in and of itself was enough to just say, this is what I'm going to do forever. I'm not leaving, because you see one life changed, and all of a sudden, it's not these overwhelming numbers of Africa. It's not the overwhelming numbers of people dying in Uganda. It's one life at a time. And slowly but surely, these lives are going to change other lives. So Amy has a maternity home now. She has about 15 girls that have started in January. And these girls come in, stay for an average of 9 months to a year. While they're there, we teach them Bible studies. And they learn about Jesus. They also learn trade skills, so that when they leave, they can go out and provide for their children. All of the girls that Amy has ever brought in have, before she gets them, already attempted abortion many times. And I think they've only been one or two that haven't also committed or attempted suicide many times by the time they get there. And Amy calls it a maternity home, but I keep telling her, Amy, we got to change the name of this. This is a home for street children, for prostitutes, for the homeless, the desperate, the needy, with every type of problem that you can imagine. I was like, oh, and by the way, they're pregnant. That's the least of our problems when they come in. So there's a lot of counseling that's done, but the transformation in their lives is just unreal. It's a privilege to be able to go over there and serve these girls. I want to share really quickly about Amy's hospital ministry that she also has. There's several aspects, and you, I think, have some brochures. You can go to the website and read a lot about it. But Amy also works with local government hospitals. The health care in Uganda is free. The school system is, the schooling is expensive or costs money. But when Amy first told me we're going to go to a hospital, I said, great. I'm going to take my camera. This is going to be great. I have a stomach of steel. It's not going to bother me. I'm going to get the good footage. We're going to show this stuff. It's going to be great. And we walked into this hospital. It's this huge room, probably 50 beds on either side, just these metal beds with a piece of foam on them. And just people everywhere, laying on the floors, laying on the beds. And I was like, wow. First of all, I was hit by the smell. And I was like, oh gosh, maybe I'm not going to make it through this. And we go over to these girls that Amy had met, and she was helping. And I started hearing, I was like, you know, Amy had told me about them. But these girls, when they become pregnant, they oftentimes are abandoned by their families, rejected, kicked out, and they have nowhere to go. If they can make it to a hospital when it comes time for them to give birth, they're considered the lucky ones. They made it to a hospital. They're not out in a village hut trying to do this by themselves without anybody. But when they come there, they have to provide, they have to supply the hospital with everything that the hospital is going to need to treat them. So if they don't come with cotton, gauze, iodine, hydrogen peroxide, they don't get treated. And so Amy, when she started learning about this last summer, was, we've got to do something. So she would oftentimes go in the hospitals with just cotton and gauze, meet these girls and say, hey, what do you need? And she would watch as these nurses would come by, these girls who've gone through horribly performed cesarean sections, lying on these beds in their own filth because they're too weak to get up and go find a bathroom. They're too weak to even sit up and feed themselves. But they have no money because they're the poor, right? So they have no money to go buy food. Hospital doesn't provide food. Hospital doesn't provide water. So many times these girls haven't eaten in several days. So they're already extremely weak. And Amy goes in there, and these nurses are walking by saying, well, let's see, this looks pretty bad. Hadn't been changed in a couple days. You're going to need some cotton, gauze, iodine, hydrogen peroxide. You probably need to be on an antibiotic. And they write it out on a piece of paper and tear it off, leave it on the bed. When you get the supplies, I'll be back. These are girls whose parents have told them they don't ever want to see them again. So they're there without anybody. They're there by themselves. They can't get up out of bed to use the restroom. How are they supposed to go buy cotton and gauze? So we were there, and Amy was talking to several of the girls that she knew and was helping currently. And I look over, and there's this girl sitting on the concrete floor, banging her head up against the concrete wall, just tears streaming down her face. And I was like, Amy, like, we got to go figure out what's going on. And so Betty, the national Ugandan, goes over and starts asking her some questions. Her name's Monica. She's 16 years old. She had 4 or 5 hours before just come out of a C-section. Her baby had died, as is very often with these C-sections performed in these hospitals. And she was just in immense pain. She was mentally tormented. I have no place to go. I have no one here to help me. My baby's just died. And in physical pain that I cannot imagine. And so we began talking to her, and we found her a bed that she could get up on and helped her get up. And over the next few weeks, I became very close to Monica. This was back in March. And I would go every day, and I would feed her because she didn't even have the strength to get up. And I, as I began becoming more and more close to her, I did take some pictures and videos of her wounds and herself with her permission, and she was fine with it all. But she had nobody. And I would try to call my mom, or I'd be talking to a friend back in Georgia, trying to explain my new best friend, Monica, this girl I've been with every day. I'd go by there 3 times a day, taking her meals, taking her cotton, gauze, blankets, whatever she needed, just holding her hand. And I couldn't explain that she had nobody. Because I know if I was in a hospital, I would have friends coming by. If I were on death's doorstep, if I was starving, couldn't keep any food down for multiple days in the condition that she was in, I would have family, I would have flowers, and she had nothing. And one day I was in there, and there was another lady that has, over the months that Amy's been working in the hospital, seen what she's doing, a Ugandan lady, And she's been changed only by watching what Amy's helping. Amy hasn't never personally helped her other than she buys all of her meals for the hospital girls from this lady. She's a cook. And she saw what Amy was doing, and she's like, they kind of do need help, don't they? You know? And so she began going to the hospital without Amy. She lives right next to it. She began going to these hospitals. She would be the one that would call Amy and be like, hey, there's another girl here. You want me to go and feed her too? You can pay me later. And it was awesome just to see the transformation in this woman's life. When you see someone else helping and you see the joy that they have from helping other people, you automatically want to start helping them too. And so she came by. I was there and I had been feeding Monica dinner. And she said, I'm going to bathe her. You want to help? Can you help me? And I said, wait a minute. I'm not that great of a, you know, person like that. I don't know if I can handle that. She's like, I need your help. I was like, okay. She's been laying in her own filth. And I didn't realize at the time, but this woman had been coming by herself every night to come bathe Monica on her bed. She can't get up out of bed. And she's skinny. She's a tiny, very sickly-looking 16-year-old, but she's still a 16-year-old, a little bit shorter than me. And I had no idea how she'd been doing this all by herself. And as I sat there and obeyed her, I couldn't help but think of the Bible verses that Jesus said, you know, whatever you do, do it to the least of these, you do it to me. And he says, I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you brought me something to drink. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you helped me. I was in prison, you came to visit me. And I was just sitting there helping this girl, I'm sure who was humiliated, you know, by the condition that she was in, as I'm helping her do these basic things that she couldn't even do for herself anymore. I was just reminded, Jesus, that's you. Nowhere else in the Bible does Jesus say, that's me in the flesh, except for the poor. When he said, the least of these, that's me. Jesus doesn't live here on the earth anymore. I can't go bake him a cake and take it a few doors down. I can't go take him an extra coat that I just bought. But there's always the poor. It says that in Mark. It says, there will always be the poor. I won't always be here forever, but you will always have the poor around you, not just in Uganda, not just Africa, not just in Romania, everywhere. He's like, what you do to them is what you do to me. When you help them, you're helping. When you touch them, you're touching me. And so Mona continued to get better over the next few weeks, and it came time in April, early April, for me to have to leave. And I was flying out the next morning, so I went to the hospital, and it happened that they were about to clean her wound, get her new dressed and everything. And Monica just grabbed me. And I went up there to say bye, and she grabbed the back of my head and pulled me down, and she kept saying, Mama, Mama, don't go. Don't go. And it just tore me apart because I knew Amy was leaving with me, and I knew Betty, and that the other Ugandans would still be checking up on her, still bringing her food and whatever she needed, paying her medical bills. But she just needed love. She needed that love that knew somebody cared about her, somebody cared whether she lived or died, somebody cared how she was doing. And that was one of the hardest things for me when I was walking out of there knowing I was never going to see her again, more than likely. And I got a phone call from Betty the next day, or 2 days later after me and Amy were back here. I said, how's Monica doing? Have you been by there? And she said, well, yesterday, the day after you left, one of her relatives, whether it was a grandmother, an aunt, we're not sure, came by and discharged her from the hospital. In Uganda, they can do that. You just walk in and say, this is my relative, and I don't care if she's ready to go. I don't care what her wounds are like or what medical attention she still needs. We're discharging her. We're leaving. And that hit me really hard. I still don't know what happened to her. I don't know what village she lived in. I don't know where she went or who it was that discharged her. I do know that she wasn't ready to leave a hospital in the condition that she was in. And I say all of that to say that these lives that Amy's helping, whether they're in the hospital, whether they're in her village maternity clinics, whether they're in her maternity home, these girls like Rebecca, they would have been the Monicas. They would have been the ones in a hospital laying on death's doorstep. And for me to think about even Rebecca's story is hard enough, but to think that if God hadn't brought Rebecca into where Amy was, she would have been the one in the hospital. And there's a very good chance that she would have died there alone, not knowing that anybody cared, not knowing the love of Jesus, not knowing that there are people out there who accept her for who she is and forgive her for anything that she may have done to get to where she was then. And so in closing, I just want to say that no matter where you are, you know, he's just shown numerous people that are giving all over the world, have given their lives to years and years of these places. And that's amazing. And you don't even have to go to those places. You can do that here. Definitely God calls people to go to other countries. He calls people to give. He calls people just to be extreme. But you can be that extreme person in someone's life here. You can be the person that changes the world for somebody anywhere. So thank you for letting me come up here and share. I'm going to be out here in the back, I think, down there for lunch. Absolutely. So the two projects that we all kind of highlighted for helping Kupendwa, acreage for farming, and also a boda. I think there was a picture of like a motorcycle up here. They're called boda bodas in Uganda. I have a huge scar on my leg from falling off of one. They're crazy over there, the driving and traffic. But it's the main mode of transportation, and a new one costs about $1,000. And you're thinking, okay, there's these dying women in Uganda. Why are we buying a motorcycle? But what that means is that that's going to be a weekly income for Amy in the ministry. There are many times that volunteers come or anything like that where we would use them physically, like physically be the ones on them. But Amy really sees this as an investment. You buy at Boda. I think they, gosh, I want to say it's about $1,000 for one, is the estimate that Amy gave. And you hire a driver to be the driver of the boda. And so every week they're transporting people, just like public transportation. And that brings in a weekly income for Amy. And when Amy came back in April, her main goal is to raise monthly sponsors. She definitely needs to know like the finances coming in every month so that she can budget that, whether that's for rent and water and electricity or whatever the case may be. But she sees this as an investment to know a safe driver as well if an emergency comes up, but just to have that weekly income. And then the other thing, which I think is amazing, is acreage for farming land. When the girls come into the maternity home, Amy doesn't want to just help them, give them food, medical supplies, say, hey, you're on your way, you had a baby, it's healthy, you're healthy, you got to leave because we've got another girl that's coming in. Amy wants to equip them so that when they go out, they can raise support and provide for their own family and for their baby that they just brought into this world. So we treat them. You'll see necklaces and beads and stuff like that downstairs. They learn how to make those things. Many of them have not been to school. Many of them come in at 16, 17, 18-year-olds. They don't even know how to write their name. So Amy teaches them a lot, educational as long as these trade skills. And one of those skills is farming, agriculture. Uganda is an extremely agriculture country. And we were both born on a farm, raised on a farm, so me and Amy understand that that's been our income, my father's only job, for as long as we can remember. And so it's really neat to see that this country supports itself mainly from agriculture. And so these girls, Amy wants to buy land so that they can farm and these girls can learn how to grow their own crops, grow their own food, provide to themselves when they leave, as well as grow enough crops to be able to sell back to the community. And so they can see this as a way to make income, so when they leave, they can have that, as well as all the food it would also provide for them and for Amy and her kids. And I think that that's $2,000 an acre for really good farmland in Uganda. So those are kind of the two projects that Amy's highlighted when the McDonald's are like, we want someone to come share, and we want some projects that we can really look towards and be like, hey, this is what we want to do for you guys. Those are the two that Amy was like, this would be amazing if you guys could raise some money for some farmland and for a Boda Boda. So I think that's... thank you guys so much for letting me come up here and share with you guys. I would love to talk to you more if any of you have questions. What I touched on is a small amount of what Amy does. She does a lot over there, and I go over there, and I'm just dumbfounded by everything that she does. So many missionaries that I know over here and even in Uganda will be like, when does she have off? Is she going on a weekend trip? Get her act back together, breathe a little bit, take her kids out. And in the entire time that I don't think Amy's been over, she just keeps going. She truly does need your prayers. She's constantly daily making decisions, getting phone calls that she has to assess situations and decide how best to help these people, whether it be an outpatient program or whether they should come in or whether she should take supplies or anything like that. So just definitely pray for her if you remember. And yeah, I'll be down there for any questions or anything like that. Thank you.